Welcome to this week's edition of Everything Fast Pitch, sponsored by Fast Pitch Prep. Coach Don and I are here in the Cherokee Batting Range podcast studio, getting ready to record episode number 159. Got a really good show lined up for you today. In our warm-up segment, we're going to talk about our city of the week, player of the week. We have a special person that we're going to talk about in a program that really touched my heart when I heard about it and wanted to share some of the information about that with you. So we have a person of the week, equipment tip of the week, have another interesting did you know, another good listener question, and of course, Paige's power play. In our leadoff topic, we're going to talk about the umpire shortage. We have a special guest, Jeff Meekins, who joined us to talk about some of the challenges that umpires face and things that we all need to kind of keep in mind a little bit more as we're working through the softball experience. In our cleanup topic, we're going to talk about something that really hit close to home watching a couple of games, college games on TV last weekend, and that's the idea of the safety base at first base. Talk about that and its strengths and weaknesses. And then our coaching tip of the week, we're going to talk about preparing your team for bad weather, whatever that bad weather might be. So let's start off talking about our sponsors, the Anderson Bat Company. Everything Fast Pitch is very proud to have Anderson Bat Company as our presenting sponsor. Anderson Bat Company is using the latest and greatest bat technology to corner the market in the fast pitch world. They have the -9 Rocket Tech, the -10 Carbon, and the -11 Carbon Light. Anderson Bat Company is using this technology to put a high-performing bat in the hands of hitters that really know the difference between a good bat and a great bat. We're also working with Anderson to provide a discount for all of our listeners. Go to the Anderson Bat Company website and order your bats. Use the EFP20 discount, which is for Everything Fast Pitch, and you'll get a 20% discount. It's a great way for you to save a little bit of money on a great bat and also help support Everything Fast Pitch at the same time. And as we mentioned, Anderson is offering a 20% discount if you order a bat directly from them. You go to the AndersonBat.com website. There's a promotion code, a discount code that's EFP20. If you go to the EFP20 and enter that in the discount code, you're going to get a 20% discount. Helps to support Everything Fast Pitch, but also allows you to save a little bit extra money on your Anderson bat.
Torrey, that's a fantastic deal, too.
Absolutely.
Need to jump in there, guys.
And then let's also talk about patreon.com/everythingfastpitch. Those of you that have been listening to us for a long time have heard us talk about Patreon before. We're very fortunate. We have a very good group, solid group of patrons, people that are supporting us financially on a monthly basis, and it is the thing that is keeping this whole show on the road. There are a lot of expenses and things that go along with trying to produce the podcast and trying to continue to improve it. Those of you that have been listening for a long time know how much better it sounds now than it did once upon a time. Well, every time we have to get some new software or some new microphones or new headphones or whatever it is, those costs are something that Coach Don and I incur. And the fact that we've got patrons who are willing to support us financially is keeping this thing going. We want to stay free. We don't want to become a subscription service. And the patrons are the things that are making that happen. So we really do appreciate our patrons. If you're interested in becoming one, go to patreon.com/everythingfastpitch. There's three different levels of support, and any help that you can give us would be greatly appreciated. So, Don, our warm-up topic, let's talk about our city of the week, Alhambra, Arizona.
Nice, Arizona.
Suburb of Phoenix, I believe. Another softball hotbed. One of the things that we're really proud of now is to see the reach that we have with Everything Fast Pitch. We have international listeners that listen to us on a regular basis. We have listeners in all 50 states.
Pretty cool. There
are some states that we've kind of done a little call out on in the past. We were getting after the state of Florida a few weeks ago because our listeners were not as reflective of the number of people we know that play in the state of Florida, but those numbers are going up now.
Need
too.
To share,
so,
yeah.
So we really do appreciate our listeners sharing the message of Everything Fast Pitch, getting your friends, teammates, coaches, people that you know are fast pitch people to listen, because it's what drives the numbers. There's definitely a word-of-mouth, grassroots kind of feel to it. And if you can get one person that hasn't listened to us in the past to come on board and give us a chance, we'll take it from there. I'm confident that if they listen to a couple of episodes, that we'll hook them and that they'll keep coming back. And the more that people that listen, the more people that download, the more people that subscribe, the better it is for us. And it helps us continue to grow and carry a little bit more momentum moving forward.
Perfect.
So our player of the week this week, Don, is Allison Miller. Allison plays for Tenacity Fast Pitch out of Springfield, Missouri. Allison played in a 16 and under tournament a couple of weeks ago in Bentonville, Arkansas, and had an amazing weekend. She hit 527 for the weekend, three home runs, and Allison is one of those players that's playing up above her age. She's a little bit younger than the kids she's teaming with, and has just really done a great job. She was recommended to us by her coach, Jay Hamilton. Allison, obviously a strong player who's worked really hard, and we appreciate Jay making that nomination. So Allison Miller, congratulations. You are the Fast Pitch Prep Player of the Week. We're always looking for nominations. Please, if you have players that you would like to nominate, it can be for on-field success. It can be for things that they're doing in the community. It can just be ways to recognize kids that you think are doing a good job. And we're always looking for nominations. You can contact us at fastpitchprep@gmail.com or everythingfastpitch@gmail.com. And let us know about those players. Give us a few of the particulars. We would love to send them a Fast Pitch Prep Player of the Week t-shirt.
Tori, I think it's a lot of fun when we hear about kids at other parts of the country. You know, we have a pretty good handle on what's going on here locally, but it's really nice to hear from those around the country as well.
Absolutely. We want to recognize all the players that are doing good things. It's something that is important to us. We just want to make sure that people know those stories. And we've had a few really heart-touching, pull at the heartstrings, things that we've had a chance to talk about. And that brings us to this week's Person of the Week. One of our patrons, Ron Bittinger, sent me an email a while back about a program that's called Kylie's Care Kits for Kids. And basically what it is a program helps with underprivileged kids, making sure that they've got enough food.
Right.
When they go home on the weekends, that they've got enough food to make it through the weekend and that they're going to be taken care of. So I'm just going to read you a little intro that is on the website and kind of give you a little bit of feedback on how this all started. So my name is Kylie McCumber. I live in Leominster, Mass. I am 18 years old and a senior at the Winchendon School in Winchendon, Mass. In September of 2012, at the age of 10, I started Kylie's Care Kits for Kids, Inc. to help children who did not have enough food at home on the weekend. I had noticed that there were many children eating breakfast at my school each day and asked my grandmother why this was. We spoke with the school principal and began to research ways that we could help these kids. We currently provide food every weekend for the children. Each Friday, the children receive a care kit that includes cereal, juice, fruit cups, applesauce, pudding, macaroni and cheese, chicken noodle soup, Chef Boyardee or SpaghettiOs, granola bars, fruit snacks, whatever they can come up with. The contents of the care kits vary week to week depending upon what we can purchase on sale or what may have been donated. The original goal was to be able to provide food for 10 children each week. With the support of family, friends, and our community, we are now providing food to almost 500 children on a weekly basis. This has been a heartwarming experience for me. Thank you to everyone who has helped me with these children. And Kylie was brought to our attention by Ron. His daughter's team was one of the groups that volunteered. So the Central Mass Voodoo 12 and Under team, the coach is Don Grebener. They packed 555 lunches with their coaches and some other volunteers, you know, people that are part of Kylie's crew. He just wanted to make sure that people knew about this program. It really was meaningful because I think it's one of those ways that softball is connected to the community.
Absolutely.
And ways that people are doing good things for people that we kind of need to be made aware of. You know, for Kylie as a very young child to have recognized a need and to get involved is a pretty cool story. You know, I wanted us to talk about because I think that there are other teams that are involved in these kinds of community service projects. There's other people out there that are doing really cool things for people that need help. You know, in this day and age now with everything that's gone on in the world with COVID and shutdowns and people losing jobs and everything else, that there are a lot of people in the world that could use some help.
No doubt, Tori.
And to see a group reaching out to help, you know, over 500 kids a week that have food to get through the weekend. You know, one of the things I think sometimes we really do take for granted, those of us that have gotten to the point in our lives where we don't have to worry about where the next meal is coming from, we just kind of take it for granted. That's not true for everybody.
Well, Tori, I think it's really neat that we're recognizing them, you know, taking some time to do that. But if there's any way that anyone that's listening can help in some way, that would be really
absolutely
special too.
Yeah,
right?
And there's a website. It's Kylie's Care Kits for Kids. org, and I'm going to spell it because, of course, there's some K's and some Z's
different
in places.
Spelling.
So it's Kylieskarekitsforkids kidskits.org. So Kylie's Care Kits for Kids.org. If you're in a position where you can make a donation, if you're close enough to them that you can donate foodstuffs and things like that, I'm sure that would be really appreciated. Really yeah. do appreciate Ron Bittinger bringing this group to our attention and mentioning that his daughter's team was involved. Because to me, it's just a cool thing, kind of full circle, how the softball community can help the greater community at large. You know, just kind of reminds us all that if we're in a position where we can help, helping is a really cool thing. Ron, thank you very much. And Kylie, thank you for all that you're doing. It's an amazing program and something that you should be extremely proud of. And we're really happy to have shared your story with our listeners. So Don, our equipment tip of the week, let's talk about the Square Cuts training discs.
Yeah, the training discs have been fantastic, Tori. Again, every week, you know, we've got kids coming in talking about the things that they're doing and, you know, how it's helping them, you know, get a good feel for hitting it squarely and doing it in a safe, easy way with a good product. So
using them in lessons is something I started to really appreciate, how much feedback a player could get. And one of the things that motivated us the most was coming up with something that players could use on their own or coaches could use at practice, where every time a kid swings, there's information to be gained and there's knowledge to be added to their training. And to me, it was a really cool thing to see and very excited to see the growth with the Square Cuts discs. If you're interested, you can go to our fastpitchprep.com website. And there's an order button right there. You just click on the link. They are $49.95 per dozen. We will get them shipped out to you right away. Ordering process is really simple. You just follow the links, give your credit card number, the next day or two, we will get them shipped to you, and you'll have them in your hands very, very quickly. If you're a listener, you can use the ILISTEN21 discount code to get a 10% discount. And if you're a patron, you can get a 40% discount. So if you're curious about becoming a patron or looking for ways to maybe motivate yourself to come on board as a patron,
all the more reason.
There's substantial discount for our patrons for the Square Cuts training disc. And we want to continue our discussion of Anderson Bat Company, something that I thought of this week with the -9. A couple of kids that are using them now that I think are really enjoying them, having tremendous success. But the one thing that struck me as being a valuable asset to especially the -9 Rocket Tech is that it's a bat that, because of the construction with the alloy material, it's less temperature
sensitive
as some of the other bats. And one of the reasons that bats are such a hot topic is there are certain brands out there that break at a high rate.
And you can't use them here. You can't use them there. There's all kinds of little disclaimers in there, right?
Right. And you're not supposed to use them on cold days. You're not supposed to do all these things. And now I think really cold days are bad for all bats. But if you live in Wisconsin or you live in Minnesota or
what are you going to do, Tori?
Yes. A lot of other places that are playing spring softball when it's cold and miserable, you know, I don't think you want to have to go back to a 1970s old aluminum bat that your dad had in the garage, because that's the only thing that we're not afraid of breaking.
It's not going to perform like these Rocket Techs. Well, again, too, we're going to be talking with the owner of Rocket Tech here at some point, but the products have been fantastic. I don't know if I've heard of anybody, you know, having any issue in terms of durability. Performance been great, and they do make that, Tori, the -9 all the way down to a 31-inch.
Right.
Got some younger students that are super excited about it. It is a little bit more weighted than a typical 31-inch bat you'd find, but they've been performing great.
Yeah, well, the design and where the weight is distributed is always going to be part of whether a bat feels like it's performing really well. You know, I trust from our conversations with folks at Rocket Tech that they really understand what they're doing. The folks at Anderson have the science behind the technology. They've thought it through. They've done the experiments, they've done the research, and what they've come up with, I think, is the best product on the market.
And so, customer care is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, so we stand behind them 100%. So go to the AndersonBat.com take a look. They've got baseball and softball bats and all different sizes and weights to match up with whatever you're looking
for. Just to remind everybody, there's a discount there, right, Tori?
Yep. So again, if you use the discount code EFP20, you get a 20% discount. That's a way for you to save a little bit extra money on the bat itself, and also to help support what we're doing here with Everything Fast Pitch.
Nice.
So it's a win-win situation if you go to the AndersonBat.com and place an order, and they will ship it to you directly. It takes out the middleman. You'll have it in your hands very, very quickly. So Don, did you know in the Division I record book, the record for career grand slams, so one player in a career, you want to guess at a number?
I'm going to say 17.
A little high. It was 11.
11.
But when you think about 11 Grand Slams, Sierra Romero, while playing at the University of Michigan, hit 11 Grand Slams. So let's think about a Grand Slam.
I was going to say like Stacey Neuvman or somebody. Yeah.
But just think about the combination of things that has to happen. Number one, Sierra Romero, who was an amazing hitter, was evidently one of those amazing hitters that was fortunate enough to have people pitch to her every once in a while, so she got chances to hit. She had teammates that were talented enough to get on base often enough that she had chances to hit Grand Slams.
Right.
And then over the course of her career, actually came through and hit 11 of them.
That's really special.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of players, 11 home runs in a career would be an amazing accomplishment.
It's a couple every year, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you think about hitting one is an amazing accomplishment. But to hit 11 in a four-year softball career is a pretty strong statement about what kind of player she is. Sierra's going to be playing in the Olympics for Team Mexico. And
so we're excited,
her and her sister both. Team Mexico did a series a couple of weekends ago playing at Oklahoma. They're playing at Arizona this weekend. Chance for the Mexican national team to get itself ready for the Olympics.
Established, and yeah.
But it's exciting. But did you know Sierra Romero, University of Michigan, hit 11 Grand Slams in her career? So, Don, here's our listener question this week. This comes to us from Ron. Ron's concerned. My daughter wasn't selected team captain for her team, and her attitude has really suffered since. She was really disappointed that her teammates didn't think enough of her to vote her team captain. What do you think?
Well, that's kind of a tough one, Tori, but again, there's hopefully a lot of kids that would be capable and have good enough attitudes and strong enough personalities to be captain, and just because she didn't get chosen shouldn't be a knock on her ability or on her effort to really be a leader within the group. So, you know, I'm hoping that she would continue to have just as good an attitude or maybe even better, to be encouraged to work hard for, you know, maybe that accolade down the road.
Right. Well, and the one thing that Ron says in his statement about was not selected by her teammate.
Right.
And this is a double-edged sword. I think for all players, you would like to think you're popular enough that you've shown enough within the team structure that your teammates would all recognize that and want to reward that. And obviously his daughter believes that she's been a good leader, been a good teammate, those kinds of things, and was hoping to be recognized by getting the team captaincy. But the reality of it, over all my years of coaching, I stopped doing captain.
Right.
And I stopped doing captains because it ended up becoming nothing more than a popularity contest, and players were being selected by their teammates because they were the funniest, they were the coolest, they had the nicest car, they had the most money, they had the best-looking boyfriend,
then the resent is going to be inevitable, right?
But it was not necessarily that they were the people that were leading when times got tough. It wasn't that they were the people that you could count on when you really needed to be able to count on somebody. You know, we spent some time trying to do kind of a hybrid of the kids had input and then the coaches had input, and I didn't like that either. So eventually we just got rid of team captains altogether, and just, you know, as you mentioned, we expected, you know, to, you know, and talk to the players all about they should all be leaders. They should all, you know, be pulling their share of the responsibility and all that kind of stuff. So, Ron, I would tell your daughter not to sweat it too much, not to get too disappointed by it. If she really wants to, you know, be a valuable teammate and be somebody that does what we think of captains doing, that whether she's got the title or not, she can certainly continue to do those things. So, as you said, Don, continue to be a good leader, continue to be a good teammate. Continue to be that person that your team can count on. Do all those things that we know are important. If you get recognized for it or not is not nearly as important as you knowing when your head hits the pillow at night that you did it, even though you don't have a C on your jersey. You know, when somebody needed help today, or somebody, you know, needed to, you know, clean up the dugout, or when somebody needed to grab the equipment or whatever it was, or you pat were, somebody on the back,
you were there you were to that step person. Up, right?
Right? Yeah. So, Ron, we appreciate your question. If you have questions for us, please remember you can always send them to us at everythingfastpitch@gmail.com or fastpitchprep@gmail.com. So, Don, that's going to lead us into this week's segment of Paige's Power Play.
All right. Time to talk about focusing on the things that we can control, because when we focus on the things that we can control, that's where the real magic happens. Okay. When you start to feel your thoughts and expectations drifting towards things you can't control, like the bad call or your coach getting mad at you or your results or the mistake you just made or your parents yelling random stuff from the stands, or losing, right? Because sometimes we lose. Sometimes our team loses. Oh my goodness. And we want to start focusing on the things that you can actually control instead, like your effort, your attitude, your response, your thoughts, your trust, your self-talk, your visualization, your breath. There's so many things that we can shift our focus on and actually focus on the things that we can control instead of letting all of those things that we can't control consume us and bring us down. Because when we do this, I promise you that you'll play more relaxed, you'll have more fun, and play with the freaking confidence that you know you deserve. That's when the results fall right into our lap. They fall right into place when we focus on the things that we can control. And you're probably like, okay, this is way easier said than done. And yes, it does take practice. It takes focus. It takes mindfulness, but I promise you can do it. And the more that you practice it, the better you get at it, then those results are going to fall into place and you're going to start to see glimmers of that. So we practice all of those things that you can control in The Confident Athlete, which is opening up again this summer, 2021 summer. So get on the wait list to have first dibs, surprises, bonuses. Who knows what else is going to be coming? I got lots of things up my sleeve, but I'm so excited to share this next version of The Confident Athlete with you this summer. So hop on that wait list. It's on my website, www.pagetons.com. And I can't wait to see you in there.
Don, I love listening to Paige every week.
She's super cool.
It's awesome. So for any of our listeners, make sure you check out her stuff at pagetons.com. It's T-O-N-Z, pagetons.com. She's got all her different programs. There's a lot of free stuff. I would recommend for anybody who has a player who wants to have more fun, more success, and more enjoyment out of playing this game to sign up for her Confident Athlete program, because we know the game of fast pitch softball is meant to destroy your confidence.
But here's the thing too, Tori, is a lot of these concepts all carry over to other sports too.
Oh, other sports and to honestly real life.
Yeah.
You know, the one from a couple weeks ago when she was talking about how to have a conversation with adults,
right?
You know, whether it's your coaches or your teachers or your professors.
Or just, your coworkers or boss.
Right. Yeah. It really struck a chord because that's one of those life skill things that athletics can help us learn. So pagetons.com, check it out. Don, that's going to take us to our leadoff topic, sponsored by Elite Sporting Goods. Elite Sporting Goods is located at 905 Grayson Highway in Lawrenceville, Georgia. Phone number is 678-377-0270. You can also contact them at elitesportsorders@yahoo.com. Spirit wear, uniforms, bats, balls, gloves, whatever you need, the folks at Elite can hook you up. They'll ship anywhere in the country. So if you contact them, they will hook you up and get you taken care of with whatever you need. So, Don, we had a great guest this week. Jeff Meekins is an umpire-in-chief, a tournament director, former umpire that has worked a lot of games and was nice enough to come on board and share with us some insight and some information about what's going on in the world of umpiring and what we know for sure is a problem of an umpiring shortage. So
it's nice to hear the other side for sure, Tori.
Absolutely. So Coach Don and I are really excited. We've got a special guest with us this morning. Jeff Meekins is an umpire. Interesting story. Jeff reached out to us. We were having a discussion a couple of weeks ago, I'm sure many of you remember, talking about the umpire shortage and challenges for umpires working in the modern game, where it seems like the number of events continues to grow, but the number of umpires doesn't seem to be growing to match it. And Jeff, we really do appreciate your time, and happy to have you on as a guest this morning.
Forward to it. Glad to be on.
Good. So give us a little bit of your background, how you got into umpiring and kind of what your role is where you're working.
I got into umpiring, I guess, at the first in college. They paid us, to umpire intramural games. And I was always kind of geeky about games just anyway on the field. And so, when I found out they paid us, I did that for a while. Got out of it, after college for a few years, playing slow pitch. Got back into it in 1990. At first, I didn't want to umpire fast pitch. I just wanted to do slow pitch. But the local association said we had to do both. So I said, well, okay, I'll go back there. But got back there for that first 10 and under game behind the plate and just fell in love with it and worked my way up. Eventually was able to do a Division I college ball, ended up in the Big 12. What I do now is actually I'm a retired umpire. I UIC events and do some tournament directing for USA Softball here in the Dallas-Fort Worth metro.
Cool.
Very cool.
Yeah, I know our paths have crossed once or twice when I was coaching, but I'm curious to jump into this topic because one of the things that Don and I talk about quite often is the dynamic between umpiring and the game, parents and coaches, and just kind of how things have changed and developed over the years. And I'm not so sure that there's any other way to say it except that I think that umpires face a really different challenge now, maybe even than 10 years ago or 15 years ago. It just seems like with the social media and Facebook and Twitter world of every single time a call gets made, it ends up out there on social media for people to critique and blast, that it just seems like we've become a much more antagonistic relationship between the game, the fans, and umpires. And so I was kind of curious about what you thought about that and what you've seen over the last few years.
Yeah, several things have changed since I did my last college game in 2013 and tried to get away from ball for about 3 years before I got back into it. And yeah, lots of things have changed in that interim time. For one thing, you know, we always worked in this area rotations. We worked two on, one off for our schedules most weekends. If it was a really, really hot weekend or if it was a really, really big, important tournament, we worked one on, one off. And now, you know, when I got back into it, you know, we had guys going 6, 7, 8 games in a row because we just don't have the umpires that we used to have. Unless you do that, there are some situations in some tournaments where you're not going to be able to cover.
Well, I know one of the things that we see here in the Atlanta area is between USSSA, USA, PGF, and then all the random other different things that are going on, is that it's not uncommon for there to be 4 or 5 pretty big or really big fast pitch tournaments going on in probably a 60, 70 mile radius. And I'm guessing you get that same thing in the Dallas area because I know how big softball is there. So how difficult is it to get umpires? How much of an impact does that have? I know when you talk about one on and one off or two on, one off, for our listeners, just in case they're not familiar, that basically means that an umpire would work one game, have one game off, or work two games and then have a game off. So they'd get a chance to rest, kind of get reorganized, maybe have some lunch, those kinds of things. So I guess the question is, do you find it difficult to get enough umpires, and what do you think are some of the solutions to the problem?
We do find it really difficult to get umpires. We fight tournaments with other organizations. In Texas, we play our high school ball in the spring. On certain days, you know, certain weekends, then, you know, we're competing with the high school umpires. That's a problem. It is difficult to get umpires. We start to lose guys. Guys age out. We're not able to replace folks as fast as we would like. We recruit some of our high school kids. We've got some baseball players that we recruited, and a few fast pitch players, not nearly as many as we'd like to see. We have to, you know, on particular weekends, and some of our guys we know, they don't mind or they have the physical ability to do several games in a row without a lot of breaks. And so, you know, if we get a couple of guys that we know are able to do that, you know, we'll schedule them a field. And at some point, you know, we try to get them a break, but it's really difficult sometimes, you know, that meal time, you know, the break off where you get a meal, you know, get off your feet for a little bit, a nap, maybe even sometimes, you know, that's reduced now to, you know, okay, my game ended a few minutes early, so I've got, you know, just enough time to choke down a hot dog.
Right.
Do you guys think that's because of the decreased number of umpires, or is it more just the increase in interest in fast pitch and the number of games played?
It's some of both. It definitely, there's an increase in fast pitch, man, especially at the high school level. You know, the population is exploding here in Dallas-Fort Worth, and so we are adding high school every single year. But also, all across the country, and not just in softball, but in all organizations, people are losing officials. I know here in Texas, there's an organization out to the west of us, a football organization, that a couple of years ago, they ended a year with 225 officials. They started the next year with 175 officials. And I guarantee you they're not losing school.
Do you think it's because of the, I guess, hard approach from a stand, you know, from the spectators?
From the behavior. Do you think it's that we're losing umpires or officials in general because of the behavior of the people around the game, whether it's coaches, fans, or players?
lose some because of that, yes. Maybe even a bigger problem is that it's hard to add folks because they go out the first few weeks and they see that and they experience being on the, you know, on the wrong end of that.
Sure.
Hard to retain our newer folks for that reason.
Well, one of the things that, you know, once upon a time when I was a high school coach, this is, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, we were in charge of scheduling our own umpires. And what we would always try to do is, you know, we had a core group of maybe five or six guys that would work our games, and they always knew one or two younger umpires. So the older, more veteran guys would do the varsity games, and then we would always have some of the younger guys doing the JV and freshman games to kind of bring them along. And it seemed like everybody understood back then that there had to be like an entry level of umpiring, that, you know, that there had to be a place for umpires to learn and to improve. And it seems like we've gotten to a point now where, you know, even if you're at the rec league games and the even the lowest level, least competitive softball, that everybody's acting like it's the, you know, the World Series and every game is do or die. And I can't imagine that that's been good for you in the world of trying to bring umpires in. It seems like there is no place now that's kind of a low pressure environment where umpires can kind of learn their craft.
That's right. Yes. We try to break folks in at the league level, you know, the rec games, but a lot of times, yeah, those are some of the most hotly contested situations. Without going deep into it, I will just tell you that I am not a fan of 8 and under ball because people just don't have a perspective. Every call is like the seventh game of the World Series, right. You know, and if there's any slight or perceived mistake, you know, they people just want to go all in, and they don't understand that, you know, just like your kids are beginners at that level, a lot of times our umpires are beginners at that level, and there's not grace there for them.
Right. And I think to me, that's one of the things that maybe this discussion can kind of help shed some light on is that for some of our fans and coaches, that we really need to understand that we've created this terrible catch-22. We need more umpires, but we put so much pressure on beginning umpires that they just don't want to keep doing it. You know, it's like, you know, for the, you know, $10, $15, $20, $25, $50 a game, whatever it is, they look at it and say, you know, I just got abused for 2 hours. It's not worth it to me.
For that, yeah.
So if we could understand that many of these umpires are learning their craft, and if we could just cut them a little bit of slack, that we all might be a little bit happier in the long run.
What I try to do when I, on the rare occasions that I get to talk to fans, what I try to tell them is, you know, try to get them to understand that, you know, you're not in a ball game yourself. You know,
right.
The people who are the players, the coaches, the umpires, those folks are on the field. And, you know, the spectators, you know, I understand that you paid, you know, thousands of dollars for travel and lessons and bats and equipment and everything, not in the ball game. You know, we try to get those folks to, you know, take their cues from the coaches who are on the field. I tell people, you know, look at your coaches. And if your coaches aren't upset about a situation, if they're not yelling about it, then chances are you don't need to either.
Right. Let them do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and one of the things that I've seen more and more of is that it's almost like people come to the ballpark expecting to be mad at the umpires, expecting to be mad at the coaches. It's like they get out of the car looking for somebody to yell at.
Today's the day.
And we all know that in the course of a game, no matter what level it's at, there's going to be those close calls that half the people are going to be mad about no matter what, you know, whether you're right, wrong, or whatever, you know, that we're going to have that potential for confrontation. And it just strikes me as we've kind of crossed this point where people just come to the ballpark wanting to yell at the umpires. And so I'm curious if you think that has changed in the last few years or if it's something that you've experienced throughout your entire career.
It's probably gotten worse the last few years. There's always a certain amount of that. And people seem to think that it's, you know, it's just a part of the game that is kind of a birthright, you know, that, you know, well, you know, I paid to get in here, or, you know, if they didn't pay, you know, I have a right to be here and I have a right to say whatever I want to say or to do whatever I want to do. You know, you try to get people to understand that there's a little bit of decorum that needs to exist. And, you know, again, like I said before, if there's something that needs to be addressed, you have people for your team, you know, on the field, in the dugout, they're call coaches. And those are the folks, you know, that we'll listen to who can address those things. And most of the time, you know, if we can get it addressed that way, you know, everybody doesn't understand everything or isn't happy about everything, but we can at least, you know, can explain what happened and we can move on. It's really difficult when you've got folks who are outside the fence who just feel like they need to impact what's going on inside the fence.
Right.
And that strikes me as something that's gotten worse in recent years. And I don't know for sure, you know, why that has happened. I'm not a psychologist or a social worker or whatever to try to understand everybody's motivation. But the one thing I wanted us to talk about is the last conversation Don and I had when we talked about how, you know, we would really like to see umpires, even though they're doing their 8th or 10th or 12th game of the day, to still be able to maintain that same high level of performance. And you made a point in our initial conversation that while we all want that to happen, it's just probably not realistic to expect somebody to be as sharp on their 12th hour straight on the field as they sure. might have been at other times. And so kind of share with us a little bit about what it's like for you as the UIC or a signer when you're shorthanded and you have people, have umpires that just have to keep working. How do we manage that? How do we keep everybody moving forward and trying to keep things progressing throughout the later stages of a tournament so everybody can stay, I guess, more focused on just the games and less distracted by all these other stuff? Yeah. Let the kids play.
What I try to do, and I learned this from another UIC in our area, is I keep a wheeled cooler at most of my tournaments, especially if it's a warmer day, and I keep ice in there. And on the really, really hot days, I'll keep another smaller cooler with some chill ties and some ice. And, you try to make it around, depending on the complex, I try to make it around about once around. You need a water, you need a chill tie, you need a wipe. Try to keep those heat things done, in our area. And I'm sure you have the same, issues in Atlanta. It's, if you've got a ball game on a June day or an August day, September even, it can be really, really just extremely hot. You try to keep, watch for signs of people. And we depend on our guys, to watch their partners. Sometimes I'll get word, hey, so-and-so, he's not doing well. Can we send somebody over here? Or can you come out and look at him? He doesn't look like he's holding up. And, we have those situations, where we have to get people off the field occasionally because they're just not able to hold up.
Right. Well, we played with one of our travel teams in Dallas for the Nationals a couple of summers ago. And the one thing I can remember is I got in the rent-a-car at like 8 o'clock in the morning, and the thermostat on the thermometer on the rental car said 101. When I got to the field at like 11 o'clock, it said 102. When I got back in the car at like 9 o'clock at night, it still said like 101. That kind of put into perspective to me how miserably hot and difficult it can be in certain parts of the country. And so I guess our challenge now is to try to come to some solutions, ways to either help encourage more people to stick with umpiring, which might mean we need a come to Jesus meeting maybe with more parents and coaches to take a little bit of pressure off of the umpires. But what are some other solutions that you think, or what are some solutions you think that might help in encouraging umpires to stick with it or for new umpires to come in and enjoy the experience?
What we try to emphasize is when we talk to our younger umpires, especially our high school folks, is that, this is a really great part-time job. It beats going to, some fast food place and flipping burgers. You're outside, you get paid better, maybe not as many times a week, but you get paid better. You get to keep doing something that you've already shown that you love to do. So we try to, encourage that and emphasize that with our new folks that come in. With our newer umpires especially, I keep a little bit of a closer watch as I'm around the complex on our parents and then and on our spectators and coaches, and try to keep those situations down, where there's huge controversy and try to speak to folks and get a little bit of understanding. In all fairness, we get paid pretty well in the Metroplex. I mean, when people are yelling at you, there's never enough money, but
right,
we get compensated fairly decently in this area and at the high school level. So the pay is not quite so much of an issue. I know that's not the case. We're fortunate here. We have, we get paid well. We have great facilities here, but not everybody works in those situations, I'm aware.
Well, I think one of the things that we're starting to see as a trend that, you know, here, at least in the Atlanta area, is that certain organizations are starting to pay more.
It's kind of created a little
bit of an arms race. One group will pay a few dollars more per game to try to encourage more umpires to work for them. Then somebody else comes back and offers a few dollars more and a few dollars more. But fortunately, I think that it at least is starting to push the pay for umpires in our area up a little bit higher. Some of the numbers that I had heard at some of the showcases and some of the events around the Atlanta area for what people were getting paid per game, you know, there's no way on God's green earth that I would have put up with 1/10 of the aggravation for that kind of money. So I think, fortunately, you know, a little bit of that free market competition is helping to drive the salaries up, or the pay up a little bit here in the Atlanta area. The one thing that you mentioned earlier that I'm kind of curious about is, it seems like we're having less female former softball players wanting to get into umpiring. It seems like with the kids that I meet and the kids that I interact with, they're all interested in coaching, but very few of them see umpiring as an option. And I think that might be something that would go a long way towards helping us maybe address this problem. And I don't want this to sound too far off the track. Maybe if we had a few more female umpires, maybe people would start off with a little bit
lighter,
a little bit less aggressive nature. Maybe, you know, somehow, you know, knowing that you're yelling at somebody's mom or somebody's sister might not be quite as easy as it is yelling at somebody's dad or somebody's brother.
That makes sense to me.
What kind of luck are you having in recruiting former players, females, into umpiring in your area?
We get some, we're successful at keeping them at the youth levels for a year or two. Getting them on up into higher levels is a little bit more of a problem, which is really sad, because some of our better umpires are young ladies that have caught, you know, have grown up all their lives, you know, dealing with strike zones every single day. And, you know, when you can get those folks back there and get them, you know, a certain amount of training and get them up to a certain level, they make tremendous umpires.
Very cool.
Yeah, well, I think that might be job one, then, is for us to start to figure out ways to incentivize more of those former catchers into seeing umpiring as a good part-time job, and maybe a way to, you know, stay involved with the game after you're done. Because unfortunately, I think there's an awful lot of kids that should want to stay involved in the game that start off thinking they wanted to go into coaching. They get discouraged because they find out that there's just not that many coaching jobs where you can really make a living. Probably get discouraged and end up, you know, just getting out in the real world and getting a job versus, you know, seeing umpiring as an alternative, as a way to stay involved in the game. And to me, that's kind of sad, because I've had a handful of players that have played for me over the years that I think would be amazing umpires if that's what they had chosen to do. So, but Jeff, there's one other thing I just wanted us to talk about really quickly, because it came up in our initial discussion. I think this might be the catch-22 that leads to some of these issues. Let's say in one of your tournaments that you're a little bit shorthanded and you've got umpires that have to work an extreme schedule where maybe they're doing their, you know, fifth or sixth or seventh game in the day, that unfortunately they're out there maybe at their most tired and most fatigued as we get deeper and deeper into the tournament. So the stakes in the game seem to go up when the umpire's fatigue seems to be going up. And I don't know that there's even a question in this, but it just seems to me that that's one of the challenges for somebody in your position, is how do you keep your umpires as ready as possible for the highest pressure part of the day, when it might be, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock at game, 10 o'clock game at night, after they've been there since, you know, 8 o'clock games in the morning.
That's a bit of a problem. Part of what we do, at least in our area, is with our format, our Saturdays are usually, and granted, we don't, I do a lot of B and C ball. I work with A ball and tournament travel ball, but a lot of our tournaments are B and C. And our formats that way run where Saturday is completely pool play in most cases, and then Sunday is single elimination.
Okay.
We're able to kind of slog through, and Saturday evening is not quite so much a thing, and we're able to come back Sunday morning with some fresher folks. And then on Sunday, it's a little easier sometimes to get folks a break or two before that final round. If you start elimination on Saturday afternoon, then things get tough. Yeah, that makes things tough. And I don't know that there's a huge solution to that outside of, you know, changing up the format.
I think, you know, we've touched on it a few different ways, is figuring out ways to encourage more people to get involved with umpiring, treating them better, especially at the early stages, so that they want to keep coming back. Because the one thing, Jeff, that I thought kind of gets lost in the shuffle is for people who really do stick with it and want to make more of a career or more of a real job out of umpiring, that if they make it to the highest levels, you know, there's people that worked for us. Like when I was coaching at Tennessee Tech, we would get young umpires that weren't quite deemed ready for the SEC or ACC yet, that kind of had to make their bones at the lower levels, you know, smaller conferences, that now I'm seeing those same umpires doing games on the College World Series and SEC Network and stuff like that. And that if you're dedicated to it and stick with it long enough, you can get to the point where you could actually make some decent money.
That's good pay
if you work at that level. Is it something that you think if people were aware of the fact that if they really do pay their dues, that there's a little bit more of a payoff at the end of the rainbow? You think something like that might motivate people to stick with it longer?
There are some folks that are very motivated like that, and we try to help them. Most all, if not all, of our staff are, you know, our deputy umpire and UIC staff here in Dallas Fort Worth have that experience, and we do try to talk that up with our younger folks. Having been in the school world myself for years, you know, folks that want to coach, there's always a lot of folks out of college that want to coach, and coaching is a great thing, you know. The world needs coaches, but it's a lot of hours at the school level. Folks that, you know, they're in it for 2 or 3 or 4 years, and then they just end up teaching. Okay. And, you know, I taught, you know, and umpired, you know, so I wasn't coaching at school, but I was umpiring. So I was still involved with sport, you know, and that was able to work out for me. You know, you had some schedule flexibility enough to where you could build a career and move up that way.
You know, a couple of the guys that I'm familiar with, you know, it kind of puts a smile on my face because I can remember, you know, seeing them as young umpires just getting started in the college game. Me smile to see them now, you know, working at the highest levels and, you know, having a chance to be, you know, highly respected and well thought of. So one other question, Jeff, is there a formal training program out there, like schools or classes that people could take if they were interested in umpiring but maybe didn't want to just do the on-the-job training?
What we do with our umpires in USA softball is that we do, and some of it overlaps with the high schools, and so we kind of collaborate a little bit. We started about the same time here, but the high schools will have meetings with their folks, and you know they'll do rule study and mechanic study. We do some of the same thing at USA, not quite to the level that we would like to, because like, again, we're starting with the same, you know, starting the same time of year with the same folks. But yes, we do on-field clinics, and, you know, we have a rule study that we do with folks, you know, before we try to get that done before we put them on the field.
Right. Because one of the things that I've seen happen in this part of the country is that some people will do tournaments, like showcase events, sort of as umpire training. And they'll have, you know, 3 or 4 experienced umpires out there to kind of, you know, float around from field to field and give feedback and pointers and kind of, you know, doing on-field instruction and on-field training while those games are going on, with the idea that, you know, as a showcase game, that they're not supposed to have quite the same win
intensity,
you know, kill or be killed mentality to it. But to me, that always struck me as kind of a little bit of a twist, because you still had people that would get frustrated and ornery. So you still had umpires that we knew were supposed to be in training, that we knew were there trying to figure out if they really even wanted to be umpires, and we were still yelling
still
and screaming
on them.
At them. Yeah. Well, Jeff, we really do appreciate your time. Don and I really are excited to have you on, and you know, we really do appreciate your insight, because I think one of the things that we're always trying to do is to give people a more complete picture of what's going on in the world of fast pitch. And getting an umpire's perspective, and then obviously, you know, your perspective as UIC and organizer of events, to help people understand that some of what they're getting frustrated with might be a little bit misplaced. We're all really doing the best we can, trying to do the best job we can, and sometimes a little bit of grace or a little bit of understanding might go a long way. So we really do appreciate your time, and we're looking forward to having you back again.
All right, I would love that. Thank you very much.
Good deal. All right, well, that's going to bring us into our cleanup topic, Don. Our cleanup topic this week is something that I noticed watching some college games last week. that in the college game, we don't use the safety base. So for anybody who does not know, the safety base is a system where basically there are two bases at first base. One is white, which is the real first base, and the other one is orange or yellow, depending upon what manufacturer. And the orange base is meant to be used for the base runner to run to and through whenever there's a play at first base. And the thing that made me really think about it is in a course of a couple of games, I saw one really bad collision. I saw three other players injure themselves avoiding collisions and stepping badly, stepping awkwardly, trying to figure out how to touch first base while running at full speed, while avoiding the first baseman, second baseman, or some combination of both of them as the play was congregating around first base. Yeah. And so I wanted us to talk about it because I think we're at that point now where the safety base is something I think we should be using at all levels, period, with no more hesitation.
No, I don't see any trouble. I don't think that's a bad idea at all, Tori. Again, I think our athletes are training harder, they're faster, they're stronger, and when we're going at things, at that level or at that intensity, I think that it's inevitable that we're going to have issues, and collisions are not good for anyone.
Right.
And we're not, we're there to watch them play ball and to show their athleticism. And if they're getting hurt, we might need to take a look at it, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the level of injury and the amount of injury that we're seeing, there's a couple of really good players that are out for the year with knee injuries and ankle injuries because of congestion around first base as they're trying to run through. And you picture yourself running as fast as you can and then having to, at the very last second, zigzag or lunge or twist or whatever it is to figure out a way to touch that base while avoiding that person covering that base. It can be a really challenging thing. And I think what's happening now at the college level, hopefully this idea will gain some momentum because we're seeing some high-level players getting knocked out. But now here's a couple of thoughts I had. One of the things that is a little bit confusing is that there are certain places where the safety base is used consistently. It's used in international play. So when you watch the Olympics and you watch the best players in the world playing on the biggest stage ever, they're going to have the safety base. And they've decided in the international game that the risk of collision and the risk of injury is too great. And they just decided, years ago, we're going to use the safety base in the best interest of our players. We see it a lot at the high school level. Certain high school organizations require that you use the safety base. We see it in some of the different travel ball and rec league level play. But we don't have it in the college game, and we don't have it in baseball at the major league and the college level. One of the things that I think has happened over the years is that we've discussed the idea of using the safety base, that there are some people on the women's side, on the softball side, in sort of a misguided statement about equality, are saying, well, if they don't need it in baseball, we shouldn't need it in softball. And my argument to that would be that maybe if we showed them that we can use it in softball, they'd get smart enough to add it in baseball.
No, I think that's a fair thought for sure, Tori. And again, the whole idea is to be able to continue to play. And if, those collisions are making it difficult for everybody to continue to play, I think there's a reasonable thought in that. And it might change the game a little bit, right? If you're, the running path and, those kind of things possibly, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's interesting to think of how the game might change.
Yeah, I think it changes the game, but everything I've seen is it changes the game to the better.
To the good,
Some of the things that we've talked about recently, obviously we're talking about collisions and injuries today, which is, there's nothing good about any of that stuff. There's no way in the world that a player getting injured could be seen as anything other than tragic. How about the throw from the catcher on a dropped third strike? If we have double the area for the first baseman to navigate and double the area for the base runner to navigate, maybe we can cut down a little bit on that controversial play. Maybe we can clean that up a little bit. If we have the opportunity for the base runner to have a safer path so that they can continue to go full speed, I think that would be a benefit. To have the base runner not being allowed to veer into the baseline or alter her position a little bit to try to get into the way of the throw. I think that would be a good idea.
Tori, as you say that, if I just struck out and I'm running to first base, I want to be in the way.
Yeah, and I'm trying to be as big as I possibly can be. But all those things, you know, there's a lot of controversy that I think could be cleaned up. By having that, I think it would cut down a little bit on some of the obstruction and stuff like that that we're seeing, and definitely the collisions. Now, there's going to still be some collisions. There's always going to be that throw that sails or that tails up the line that takes the first baseman or the second baseman into the path of the base runner. We can't get rid of all of them, but if we can get rid of one of them, if one of these kids that's out for the year would still be playing, because instead of tearing up her knee trying to hit the corner of the base that
was
being covered by a defensive player, if that one player was still playing, it'd be well worth it to me. And I think that, the point about, if baseball doesn't have it, we shouldn't use it, to me is just a faulty argument.
Well, Tori, it's a different game, too. There's a lot more happening in the infield, I think, there. And things happen so quickly,
right?
From throws, erroneous throws that you have to jump, at first base for. And in baseball, you kind of see it developing a little bit more with longer base paths and stuff. But so it's a different comparison.
Right. Well, and just the nature of fast pitch softball, you have more bunting than you have in baseball. You don't really have slapping in baseball. So you have a lot more situations where the idea of those bang, bang, close plays where
and
a lot of throws are coming from the pitcher's mound forward on the field. There's a lot of throws being made by the catcher, third baseman, or pitcher really close to that first base foul line. And I think that that's where a lot of these potential throws are coming from. I think it's where a lot of these potential accidents are coming from. And it's just kind of inherently a bigger part of our game than it is with baseball. The 90-foot bases, certainly give you a little bit more time and space to sort stuff out. If you have a dropped third strike in baseball, it's not uncommon for the catcher to take three or four steps towards the pitcher's mound to open up a wide open angle so they've got a clean path to throw. Well, if the catcher in our game takes three steps towards the pitcher's mound to get ready to throw, the girl's shaking hands with the first base coach.
It's over. Yeah, so there's no doubt. I just can remember seeing a lot more opportunity to see the bad throw develop in baseball, right?
Yeah.
So you're a lot more prepared.
But the safety base, it's time that we have it at all levels of the game of fast pitch softball. We definitely need to push to get it in the college game, because these college kids having their careers cut short or their seasons cut short by injuries that we might be able to avoid by avoiding collisions that we might be able to remove, I think would go a long way. Now, sort of sidebar, I've seen a couple of things this last week where there were plays at first base that were borderline malicious by defensive players, basically like trucking base runners as they got close to the base. And obviously that kind of thing, I don't know that you can solve it by having the safety base, but that's a pretty rare occurrence. But I think
the ejection,
the malicious nature of those kinds of things is something that's just an oddity. But what we're really thinking about is a way to clean up those, almost every game, every day kinds of plays. I would be willing to bet that if you sat down in front of your computer and you watched three college games this week, you would see three or four at least injuries or really dangerous plays where somebody could have gotten hurt. And to me, that's just way too risky. For as hard as these kids work and as much as they've invested to get to that level, saying that we don't need the safety base because they're so skilled, I think it's just backwards. Let's let the fact that because they're skilled and explosive and athletic, let's look out for them.
Keep them safe. Yeah, no, I think that's a great call, Tori.
All right. So Don, our coaching tip of the week, bad weather. We have to prepare our team for bad weather.
We seem to have it, don't we?
So I saw something on Facebook the other day, Don. I don't know if I sent it to you or not. I meant to. But it was a softball game being played in the state of Alaska. And seriously looked like they were playing in a puddle.
Oh, yeah.
No, the water was like...
I believe I've seen it.
Yeah, it was like shin high. At first, I thought it was like some sort of fake. They were...
Pitcher delivering.
And water was flying around her feet as she was sloshing through the puddle.
It almost looked superimposed.
Right. That's
how
what
could
I
you play?
At first, I thought there's no way. But then I started thinking it really did look legit. So whether it's a legit picture or not made us want to talk about the idea of how do we manage bad weather? Because we all know, hopefully, we won't be playing in water up to our ankles anytime soon. But we know we're going to play on fields where the field is wet. It rained overnight and the outfield is still damp.
You know, and we want to play.
Really, absolutely.
We want to play.
So a couple of things, coaches, for us as we're thinking about preparing our teams for bad weather. Number one, we have to practice some with a wet ball. And, yeah, I know it's kind of blasphemous to take a really good softball and put it in a bucket of water and then toss it to your pitcher and say, pitch it.
Or toss it to your shortstop
and say, throw it. You know, we see it all the time in football where they do wet ball drills all the time. You know, Peyton Manning was world famous for every practice ending up with the last 15 or 20 throws he would throw would be with a ball that came right out of the bucket of water so that he could practice throwing a really wet ball for those wet game days. But so I think we need to work on that wet ball idea.
And then hope that we don't have to utilize it that much.
No. And then we need to also, be prepared with towels and rosin.
I was
going to
say towels for pitchers, right?
And rosin bags and all that stuff. But I think we need to, require our kids to just get as comfortable as we can. Because the outfielder who's picking up that ball that rolled through the wet grass, she doesn't get to stop for a second, get the towel out, dry it off for a second, and then throw it to the third baseman or throw it home.
Call timeout and get a dry one?
Right. So I think we need to, to allow our kids to experience that. But some other things that I think we need to be thinking about and practicing, sometimes it is that slippery field. As much as we can, maybe we schedule some practices on a earlier in a morning on some weekend when we know there's still going to be a little bit of dew on the grass.
I was going to say, it doesn't even have to be bad weather.
Right.
Just a morning dew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Working with our outfielders on those ground balls and those hard hit balls in the outfield that are likely to hit that wet grass and skip, and see
the water spinning off of a ground ball in the outfield.
So trying to build that into your schedule, just like we've talked in the past about the sun and the lights, making sure that you pick a practice time where it's really easy for you to simulate a really bad sun field so that, if it's early in the morning or late in the afternoon, whenever you're practicing, so you can turn your kids around and make them work on fielding a ball that's going to be coming out of that really tough sun. All these things, of course, I think we start off thinking about, safety. When we're practicing, we want to try to be as safe as possible. So maybe we're using the safety balls or tennis balls or something else to start with. But at some point in time, we need to help our kids gain confidence and their ability to play when the field is rough, when the weather is rough, when the conditions aren't quite perfect, so that when those things happen, we're as prepared as we can be.
I was going to say, there's a lot of little intricate pieces to what you're saying, Tori, with pitchers trying to keep the ball side down or the pocket side down when they're holding the ball in a light rain or a mist, and then preparing to grip it with a dry hand, with the towel and stuff like that. There's a lot of little intricate pieces that go to it. And,
right.
I think that's exciting if we can practice that.
Yeah. Well, and then just, some other things too, like really cold weather. The hand warmer in your pocket, practicing keeping your hand in your pocket as long as possible so that your throwing hand stays warm. And then, reaching out so that right when the ball gets pitched, you're ready to make a play and your hand is as warm as it could be. Those little pouchy things that kids wear sometimes, that sort of look like something like an Eskimo would be wearing or whatever
in the front,
so that you've got a way for your hands to stay as warm as possible. Hand warmers to keep your hands warm before you go up to the plate so that that first swing of the day doesn't ring the bell so loud that you don't want to swing again because your hands hurt for the rest of the day because of the vibration and the pain because your hands were cold when you were hitting. Just a lot of different things that we need to work on and to really help our players be as prepared as possible. And so from a coaching perspective, I think we need to start thinking about what's the worst case scenario. Do I really want to be out there in the drizzle in the championship game where if we win it, we win the championship, and if we lose it, we go home?
The other team's playing. We better be ready too.
And that's the first time our outfielder has picked up a wet ball and tried to throw it home. Or that's the first time that our outfielder has had to figure out how to manage the hand warmer in her pocket and being able to get her hand out of her pocket in time to actually make the play.
Fly balls on a windy day.
Right. So there's all kinds of things, bad weather, that we need to be thinking about as coaches and starting to look at it as an opportunity. So let's say we know we're going to have a really dewy morning or a really windy day. Instead of thinking about, well, let's go inside today because it's going to be so windy, it'll be hard to practice. Make sure we spend time outside on those really windy days, to work on all those different things, the sun, the wind, the wet, the cold. Those are all bad weather things. Well, not even necessarily bad weather, but all weather things, all conditions things that could negatively impact our performance and that we need to be aware of and make sure that we're prepared for.
And Tori, you think about it too. I'm glad we're talking about it because a lot of times we're trying to travel to other states and other areas in the country when we're you know, searching new competition or better competition. And the weather that we have at home might be far different than what we're traveling to, right?
Right.
Especially this time of year.
Well, and just the whole idea of being prepared, I think, is a really valuable thing. You know, when I was coaching in Wisconsin, we would, you know, because again, we're talking, you know, 90s. Everybody didn't have a specific field that they played on. Everybody didn't have enclosed dugouts. People didn't have dressing rooms and all that stuff. And a lot of the places we would play would be, you know, more of the open dugouts, sort of like you have at the typical, you know, rec league or sure, travel ball tournament, where you got the chain link fence. Well, when we would travel, we would always have three or four of the blue tarps in a bag with some bungee cords, so that if it was really cold and really windy, we could put a windbreak on the back of the dugout. We could use the bungee cords and the tarp to block the wind, so that at least for that, you know, little bit of time that we were on, you know, on offense, when the kids were in the dugout, they could, you know, kind of have a break, get a little bit of a breather, warm up a little bit, get out of the wind a little bit.
Sure.
You know, we would do the same thing on fields that didn't have covered dugouts on a really sunny day, and make our own shade, so that when we're on offense, the kids could get out of the sun and cool off and be a little bit more refreshed when they went back to get back out on the fields. So the challenge for us as coaches is to make sure that we're practicing this stuff, but also, you know, thinking about the preparation. You know, the investment that we made, probably $100 in tarps and bungee cords. Who here wouldn't pay $100 to win a really important game?
No doubt, right?
Right. I mean, you know, it was like a no-brainer. I would have done it. I would have spent a lot more than that to win a really important game. You know, I'm the guy that bought a $700 titanium bat because I knew it was going to help us and win games. And that was back.
It sizzled too, Tori. Yeah,
when we had that titanium bat that cost $700, a really good bat was like $119.
Right. It was. It
wasn't like it is now, where a really good bat is $450. And the idea of 700 seems extreme, but not like crazy. It was like seven times more expensive. If I was willing to spend that much money on a bat that, you know, we thought was going to help us win games and did, you know, certainly investing a little bit of money in a tarp and some bungee cords to help you win a game, you know, invest some money in some hand warmers that'll help you win a game.
Easy breezy.
Invest some money in some rosin bags or whatever it might be. You know, just make sure you get it done so your kids have every tool available to them to play when the weather doesn't cooperate.
No doubt. Hey, I want to throw one more thing out there, Tori, too, is for our coaches and parents to be really cautious about talking about the weather and saying how there's no way we're going to play. Because often, you know, with the bad weather, it's like, oh, there's just no way we're going to play. And then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, the rain didn't hit that area. And our athletes in their heads are already, you know, writing that weekend off.
Yeah, they checked out.
Yep, they've checked out. And I can't even begin to tell you how many times, you know, as a coach, that our teams have come up flat because, you know, the expectation was that we're going to get rained out, but the sun peaks out, the field was covered, and it's time to get out there and compete. And there was times when we were just flat just because the weather was, you know, looking like the game was going to be canceled, and it wasn't. So we got to be cautious about that as coaches and parents, because I know we do it. We do it all week long here. It looks like it's going to rain. There's no way we're going to play. And then they come in and they're like, yeah, we played, but.
Yeah, miraculously, a lot of those weekends, we find ways to get some games in. So,
yeah.
Well, cool. Well, so coaches, make sure we're thinking about being prepared for whatever Mother Nature or the circumstances might dictate. That's going to wrap up episode number 159. Please make sure you check out our sponsors, Elite Sporting Goods, Anderson Bat Company. Please check out patreon.com/everythingfastpitch. We would love for you to become a patron. Also, check out fastpitchprep.com. You can order the Square Cuts training discs there. Go to the order button. It's going to take you through the process. They're $49.95 a dozen. You need to have a dozen of these things for practice this week.
Be a patron.
Patron will get you 40% discount.
Yeah.
If you order them as a listener, enter the I Listen 21 discount. That's going to save you 10%. Don, anything else for episode 159?
No, looking forward to another great week, Tori.
All right, so for our producer, Stan Lewis, and Coach Don McKinley, this is Coach Tori in the Cherokee Batting Range Podcast Studio saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.